wishing all Radio Aryan listeners a happy Christmas and a diversity-free new year.
Tune out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system at RadioAryan.com.
And welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday, the 6th of December 2018, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, and we're broadcasting live at RadioAryan.com today because we have Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson with us. Matt, how are you doing today?
I'm hanging in there, my friend. How are you doing?
Pretty good, pretty good. It's a lot better than can be said for one of our compatriots who is on trial at the moment, a trial that all the eyes of the world are on, really. Somebody that we believe to be innocent, and we hope that justice is served and he is found to be innocent, but whether that will happen or not, I just don't know. We're talking about James Fields Jr., today. We've both been looking at all the details of the trial so far, so we're going to go into some of that. And of course, you were actually there on that day yourself, weren't you, Matt?
I was there. I fought my way through and was taken down by actually bear mace, very caustic bear mace. And I got two ocular occlusions in my eyes, two tears in my eyes. And so I was essentially blind for 3 days. Worth it. So, you know, I don't have mountains of sympathy for these people. I think in any conversation about this stuff that our people might have with normies, the first thing we got to say is that these people came to kill us. That's what they said. And they've been doing this for every rally of anything even remotely like ours since at least 1979. That was their intent. So pretty much anything that happens is their fault.
That gives you an idea of the atmosphere on the day, doesn't it? You know, it left you blinded for 3 days. They had signs saying they wanted to kill fascists, they wanted to kill Nazis, and what were the nationalists there for? To save the Confederate monuments. They weren't there to smash communism or beat up the Antifa. They were just there to have a legal demonstration with a legal permit. The Antifa didn't have a legal permit. And what happened was when the state of emergency was declared, the nationalists left and the police just stood down. And the Antifa was still there in the middle of the town 3 hours later. And this is when James Fields was trying to get home. It was his first demonstration that he'd ever been on. I mean, my heart really goes out to the guy. He goes on his first demonstration and this absolute tragedy happens. And his car is attacked, which you can see on the video, and he tries to reverse back, but he can't get out. The Google Maps is telling him to go one way, but the Antifa had actually moved one of the street signs, so he couldn't go the way that he wanted to go. And he just had a guy with a gun pointing at him. And it was the third time that he's seen this guy Dwayne Dixon, who is testifying today. On his Facebook page, it said that he pointed a gun at James Fields Jr. and told him to get stuffed, basically. And in the court today, he has said that he saw James Fields Jr. three times, but his gun was pointing at the ground. So he's contradicted what he said on his Facebook post, so you don't know whether he perjured himself on the post or whether he's perjured himself in court. But if James Fields Jr. had just seen this guy three times, and on the third time, the guy's pointing a gun at him, and he's saying, get lost, and then James Fields Jr. drives down this road, and his car gets attacked, and there's a huge mob of Antifa there, what's he to do? If he goes back up the road, he could get shot. So I think he just panicked. His car was being attacked. He was surrounded by a gang that wanted to kill him. And I think he just tried to drive forwards in the hopes that they would move out of the way, possibly. I really don't think this was premeditated murder at all, Matt.
No, there's not a shred of evidence that that's the case. If this man wanted to kill people, he would have floored that thing. It's a very fast car. And he would have hit these people at 60 miles an hour. I was able to – actually, I had to pull my eyes open with my fingers to watch this for the first time when it was on CNN. And it couldn't be more obvious that they were attacking his car. They smashed his windshield. They were threatening him. I didn't know about the gun until articles that came out more recently. You know, and he was in such a panic, this kid, when they arrested him. He had no idea. He said, I didn't want to hurt anybody. He had no choice but to do what he did. He knew that they were going to kill him otherwise. His car, of course, is a wreck as a result of all of this. And I'm happy to say, from what I could tell, what I can gather, the trial isn't going half badly. His case is pretty much airtight, which means that if he loses, it's then pure political, you know, force. And the thing that upsets me about this, and I said the same thing about Edgar Steele, is that it could have been me. It could have been any one of us who were there that night, that day. In Pikeville, you know, I drove my own car there. I drove very close to a bunch of Antifa as I was leaving. It could have been me. And this kid did nothing wrong. And if he's vindicated, it's going to be – I wonder what the left is going to do about it. I don't think it's going to affect anything. But from what I could tell, you know, despite the judge being very biased and everything else, it seems to be going more or less in his favor. I get that impression anyway.
Well, there have been cases where there has been masses of pressure from the public, from the media, to find people guilty, and the court has found them innocent. Cases with Trayvon Martin and I forget the name of the guy that ended up shooting him, but there was masses of pressure for them to find him guilty. Zimmerman, that was his name, to find him guilty, and they found him innocent. And the same with Michael Brown, and when Michael Brown was shot, and there was loads of pressure, but both of those times it wasn't a white nationalist, it was a white police officer, and it was a neighborhood watchman. So this time it's a white nationalist that they're screaming for his blood. The lynch mob are out for him. But when you look at the evidence that's actually being put forwards to show that this was premeditated, it's extremely flimsy. And it's really quite worrying. One of the things that's been put forward is the fact that he sent out a meme of a load of protesters being run over by a car. Now, this is a very old meme, and he sent that out before the permit was even granted for the rally. But the meme itself goes back to the Black Lives Matter protesters that were blocking the roads. Now, I believe there was a state in America that then legalized it for you to run protesters over if they were in the road. I forget which one it was. It might have been Florida. And I think that meme came out after that.
I thought it was Arizona, but I could be wrong about that.
Yeah, to give us some details on it, if you remember better than me, Matt.
Oh, I mean, we all passed that meme around. It has to do with those when Black Lives Matter were blocking highways in major cities. It has no bearing on the rally at all. But the other aspect of their argument is, I think, what you mean by worrying. The very possession of a picture of Adolf Hitler, if it's not possessed with the intent to hate him or condemn him, is itself proof of hostile intent. This is part of the prosecution's argument. So you kind of see what precedent this might be. I know it's a criminal case, but, you know, the very act of possessing a picture of Hitler in a neutral or laudatory way is automatically proof of intent. That's the worrying aspect of this to me.
This is one of the instances that actually Andrew Anglin was using in the trial that was against him. He was saying, well, look, we don't believe in the Holocaust. So when we talk about gassing, when we talk about soap and killing all these Jews and gassing them, it's because we don't believe that any Jews were gassed. So it's not with any violent intent, because that's not what we believe in. And you could say the same here. I mean, we don't support Adolf Hitler because of the Hollywood image of him. We support Adolf Hitler because of what he did for Germany and what National Socialism was about, not because of this caricature that's been given us. His support for Adolf Hitler wasn't because he thought Adolf Hitler killed 6 million Jews. I mean, that's something totally different. So this is worrying, very worrying. If they can just use pictures and say, well, that's evidence of violent intent.
One part we have to remember is that the regime, whether it be professors or ordinary people or journalists, they've never heard our position put intelligently before. So all they have are these media caricatures and cartoonish distortions to go by. So what these people going into a courtroom think guys like us believe has no bearing on reality whatsoever. So when they try to, you know, so in the prosecution, of course, is these ridiculous, cartoonish views. Is that really what they're basing this argument on? We all know Hitler killed all these Jews. Therefore, having this picture automatically means he wants to kill more. I mean, that's the level of argumentation that the process. But if this is what the prosecution has to argue, then how strong can their case be? You know, these people, I mean, there's video, but, you know, I want to say, I thought Jacob Goodwin had a great case too. And that's what bugs me, because he had an airtight case. There were so many videos and so much evidence. And of course, these groups were trying to kill us. That's a standing order that they had. So, you know, you could corrupt a judge, you could corrupt a prosecutor, but 12 members of a jury, that's another matter. So I'm hoping that the poor Jacob, you know, he was an anomaly. Because the prosecution's case here is very, very weak, but the regime has so much riding on this. Are they going to let him walk? I mean, you mentioned Trayvon Martin. I could mention, Rodney King in 1992. Cops were found innocent. Officer Wilson. In St. Louis, you know, maybe Jacob Goodwin is an extreme case, and that jury was corrupted in one way or another. I don't know, but the prosecution's case is very weak. And if this is what they have to argue, then it's, you know, he sounds to me like he's in good shape right now.
The prosecution were trying to get questions struck down on what the atmosphere was like that day. You know, as you were saying, they were there to kill Nazis is basically what the counter protesters were there for. And the judge did actually allow that question to be put to some of the witnesses. What was the atmosphere like? And the prosecution tried to get that struck down. So, I mean, maybe you're right. I mean, my worry is that because it's, you know, it's been held in Charlottesville, the jury are going to be from Charlottesville. And we've seen what they did, as you say, to Jacob Goodwin. And you've got, there is so much, establishment interest in this. If you actually look at what he's been charged with, he was initially charged with one count of second degree murder, three counts of malicious wounding, and one count of hit and run. And then you've got Attorney General Jeff Sessions, when he was Attorney General, said on Good Morning America on August the 14th that the attack met the definition of domestic terrorism. And then on June the 27th this year, as reported by the DOJ's Office of Public Affairs, a federal grand jury charged Fields under two hate crime statutes with multiple federal hate crimes. He's got one count of a hate crime act resulting in the death of Heather Heyer, 28 counts of hate crime acts causing bodily injury and involving an attempt to kill, and one count of racially motivated violent interference with a federally protected activity resulting in the death of Heather Heyer, driving his car into a crowd of protesters on a downtown street in Charlottesville, Virginia. And I don't understand that. I mean, a federally protected activity. He was trying to interfere with a federally protected activity. The Antifa parading in the streets in the middle of a state of emergency, that is a federally protected activity. You would think that the Unite the Right protesters, they were the ones federally protected. They were the ones that had a permit to be there. All of this happened because the police didn't do their job. They announced a state of emergency and then allowed the Antifa to stay there in that street on the road basically looking to kill people. And you've now got this terrible
In my 30 years of both street activism and scholarship, I've never seen anything like it. Because even, you know, we fought our way through. I go down with the mace. My son, who was really the hero of the day, helping all of our guys. I was hanging onto his shirt and he was bringing me, kind of leading me up to the statue. I still didn't see a cop. Of course, my vision wasn't all that great, but I was able to force my eyes open now and again. I didn't see a policeman. Usually they keep us separated, as we all know. This is the only time I've ever seen or even heard of this happening. But you mentioned the state of emergency, and this is what people need to realize. That Antifa mob that Heyer was a part of had no right to be there. They were criminals. They were guilty of disorderly conduct in public places, according to Virginia law. And not to mention unlawful assembly, as ironic as that might be. I mean, only in America could a man be charged with a hate crime for allegedly hurting people with signs saying "kill the fascists." You know, blatant hatred on their side. And then on top of all that, those attacking the Dodge Challenger, of course, assault or battery by a mob is a separate crime in Virginia. And then as some of our people were returning to their vehicles, these very same people, Heather Heyer included, prior to the incident, were attacking them as they returned, which of course is a whole separate set of crime. This is a rap sheet that these guys have. And this is why you can't read any mainstream papers on this. They won't talk about this. This was an unlawful mob. This had nothing to do with protests. Calling them protesters is a misnomer. They were de jure right criminals, no question.
There's footage of them doing that. There's footage of them going off to attack people. There's recording or evidence of them saying that they wanted to go there to attack Nazis. That was the whole point of them going there. I mean, I was sat here watching it on YouTube on the day itself and just thinking, well, hang on a minute. What are all these Antifa doing there? What are all these counter-protesters doing there? Why haven't the police kept them separate? Do they deliberately want to see a fight? And then I thought, well, they do deliberately want to see a fight. And then you could see the riot police there. And I was thinking, well, they can't be doing this. They have a permit. And all these riot police were lining up. And then you saw Richard Spencer's live feed go down as you know, the riot police just started attacking the people that had a permit to be there. And they were doing nothing about this Antifa mob, communist mob, with their flamethrowers and their bottles full of chemical weapons and everything else that they were using. It's an absolute travesty. And then when you think about at the end of it, Jason Kessler, the organizer, tries to give a press conference and the lynch mob chase him from the stage and attack him. I think two people were charged with that, but that was all. I mean, the police couldn't even keep order at the press conference at the end of it. And yet the people that have been attacked over this, the people that are the bad guys, were the white nationalists, just because they didn't like what they were chanting. I mean, they've also used the fact that he was chanting "Jews will not replace us." But apparently that's evidence of him being a terrorist and premeditated murder as well, just because he was singing that. I mean, it's got to such a terrible state of affairs in America now. It's almost as bad as Europe. I mean, one of the other things I've noticed about this is the character assassination that they tried to do of this young man as well. I mean, they're bringing up things that he did when he was 14. Apparently, he attacked his mother when he was 14. You think, well, that's 8 years ago. I mean, he's at an adolescent age, and a lot of adolescents rebel against their parents. You know, and they do silly things, but there's no record of him breaking the law since then. He had a good job. He had a car. He was expecting to go to work the next week. You know, if that was all they could find was that he attacked his mother years ago and she was frightened. You know, I would just suggest that that was just him going off the rails a little bit. He certainly didn't seem to be a nutter. I mean, his father died, and I think his mother's father and mother died in a murder-suicide or something. And he's had a really lot of horrible things happen to him in his life, and he was on medication for bipolar disorder. which would lead to him, you know, being a little bit confused. You can understand that he wouldn't have been thinking straight. His car was being attacked. He was being threatened with a gun up the road, and he just did the wrong thing. I mean, this is a tragic accident. It's horrific to think of him being charged like this.
If he was on any, I didn't realize that he was diagnosed with that. If he was on any kind of antipsychotics like Seroquel or anything, aggressive tendencies would have been suppressed. And he was taking his medication. The last thing that he would want to do, because they serve as dopamine blockers. I don't know if that's a part of his defense or not, but if he was taking his medication, bipolar usually requires antipsychotics. Aggression is the one thing that's almost immediately cut out of it. When this first happened, my question immediately was, how did he get his car there? Because the city downtown was shut down. So I think you mentioned in the very beginning, one of the Antifa moved the roadblock. There was someone assigned to that road who abandoned her post and left it open. And you could see why some people might get a little suspicious there. So you have not just the police, and they certainly had the manpower, refusing to make sure we can get to the statue. But then once they declared the state of emergency, refusing to clear the streets of Antifa, which they could have done very easily, allowing them to rampage for several hours. So you have at least two failures. And then, you know, I'll point out yet again, the poor troopers in the helicopter crash. That helicopter should not have been flown. It had nothing to do with the rally. They were protecting the governor. And that had been crashed recently and not put back together again. Again, I've always been very suspicious of that, allowing that to go up with these guys in it. And trying to blame that on Unite to Right thing. So the police have many, many failures here. And that's one of the key elements, that he should never have been able to get his car anywhere near that area.
Well, apparently the defense has been presenting their case as well this week, as well as the prosecution, but I really haven't heard much of it. I mean, from what I was looking at today, they were saying it's going to wrap up today and then it's just going to be the summing up. But I haven't really heard much of what the defense is, apart from the fact that he's pleaded not guilty to all of this. And you have to imagine the state that the young guy is going to be in as well. I mean, he's been in solitary confinement for over a year, which is really going to do him a lot of psychological damage. But he still refused to plead guilty to any of this. We've got his address, actually, on the political prisoners page. If people want to send him letters, send him cards. I know people were sending him Christmas cards last year. I don't know if anybody has actually been able to have any correspondence with him, because the others that were put in the Charlottesville jail, they weren't allowed to see him. He was kept apart from the other people that were in there. I think they might have caught a brief glimpse of him, but none of them were able to actually get to him, to talk to him, to see if he was okay, to let him know that, you know, the whole world doesn't think he's guilty, that, you know, his community is there for him. That's what he needs to be told. You know, if you think about his poor mother, she's a paraplegic as well.
I just know that. Through. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Well, you know, to the young guys listening to this, you need to be prepared that this may be you one day. You know, a lot of the machismo in our movement of guys, you know, with flags and bandanas around their faces and everything else trying to look tough. This kid has shown immense strength, because what he's been put through in solitary, given the coverage and everything else, it's torture. I don't think people realize the psychological agony of being in a completely plain, tiny little closet box for all this time with very little time out of it. It's almost designed to break him down, and yet he still maintains his dignity in this. I had no idea his mother was a paraplegic. But you know, in Pennsylvania, we have something called a preliminary hearing, where before anything can happen, a judge hears whether or not there's even enough evidence to schedule a trial. Now, I don't know if they have that in Virginia or not, but in PA, it may not even have been scheduled. So right now, the agony that this kid is going through psychologically has been intensified. And we need to show him tremendous respect for not simply breaking down entirely. And I have nothing but respect for the kid. He's stronger than I am, and he's done nothing wrong.
And he seems to have come to nationalism all by himself as well. He wasn't a part of any organization or a part of any group. Apparently, when he was at school, he was fascinated by World War II, and when they would do their studies into that, he would take things so much further than the rest of the class. So I was obviously very interested in it, and obviously discovered the truth of it, that it was different to what they're actually taught in the school. One of his teachers has said that, oh, he was a white supremacist and a Nazi, and it was because of him studying National Socialism. So it wasn't like he came to the alt-right through Pepe memes. You know, he obviously understood the ideology of it all. And that was the first time that he'd actually been to a demonstration. That's what I find so sad about it. You know, it was the first time he'd actually met up with other nationalists. And this is what happened to him. But you're mentioning there, Matt, about, the images that are being used as the evidence against him, and that people should be careful, but that this could be any one of us. If some dreadful accident happens or whatever, and there are non-whites involved, if they know you're a nationalist, they're going to claim that it's a hate crime. And then they're going to go looking through your comments to see if there are any violent imagery in there. Like this image here of this car running into these protesters. I noticed yesterday there was, I think there's been arrests as well, but there was a BBC news story on people in Britain that have been swapping memes. And one of them was of Prince Harry, and it was executing Prince Harry for marrying a Negro. And they're using that to say this is violent intent. This shows that this person wants to kill Prince Harry. Never mind the fact it's just a cartoon. And it could just be Tom and Jerry. Is that evidence that you want to hit pet cats with sauce frying pans? No, it isn't. You know, and this imagery obviously doesn't show that he wants to kill Prince Harry. But that's the way that it's being portrayed, and that's the way it's being portrayed in this trial as well. It's something people need to be careful of, I think, is the imagery that they're using.
Well, there's no question. We need to remember that the end goal here, from the election of Trump through the events in Sacramento, Alabama, Pikeville, and then Charlottesville, the left was losing, and losing badly. For the first time ever, we were outnumbering them on the street. We were outmuscling them on the street. It used to be years ago, like 7 of us and 10,000 of them. We were outnumbering them for the first time. Alt-right stuff is, I hate using that word, is mainstream. People are talking about this, you know, these websites are exploding all over the place. And they needed something, the system needed something to pin on us. I mean, the fact that they're willing to say that helicopter crash, so I'm not sure, I guess our collective hate somehow was aimed at it and brought it down a few counties away. I guess that's their argument, because I don't know what the connection would be. But that's how far they need to go. They need victims. And that's why they use the younger, cuter picture of Heather rather than the rotund, Rubenesque person that she became. So the left is involved in this body shaming now because, they don't want that as their spokesman. They want the younger version as their spokesman.
Yeah, she was twice the size, 3 times the size when she actually died than the pictures that they're actually showing of her. They're really trying to portray her as being this really lovely person, and she was out there for blood. She was out there with the rest of the Antifa for the blood of the white nationalists. I mean, right from the start of the videos that I was watching on the stream, there was a guy with a smash the Nazis thing on his T-shirt, and they were asking why he's there. He's like, to kill Nazis, to smash Nazis. He's quite open about it. And I was thinking, how can the police allow that to go on? I mean, when you think about what the left have, I mean, they just talk about smashing white nationalism. I mean, all the imagery of it is violent. And what do we say? Oh, it's okay to be white. You know, and we have to stick to saying things like it's okay to be white, because otherwise they will use the imagery against us, like they have done in this case, like they're doing now in Britain against these lads that made these memes. I think we've got to be careful about the imagery that we put out. If it's going to be using imagery of actual people and scenes of violence, it's not a good idea to have it, because it will be used against you. You don't know if you're just going to have, you could just have an altercation with somebody that isn't white. And if they know that you're a nationalist, they will say it's a hate crime, and the police will go through your comments and they'll find something in there that looks like it's advocating violence, and they'll use that to pin it on you. Even if you're totally innocent. Well, it looks like Matt's got a bit of a problem there with his sound. But I think we've covered just about everything we wanted to cover in this. I really do think people need to be careful about the memes that they're putting out. When you look at just what they're using in this case as evidence against James Fields Jr. and what the BBC article that they put up yesterday trying to say that there were people wanting to murder Prince Harry just because they put up an image showing something like that. I think we've got to be careful about this stuff and make sure that it's cartoonish and it's not too graphic, and also be careful about putting support for violence in the comments, because it can be used against you, and you never know when it's going to be you. You know, as Dr. Johnson says, it could be any of us that are on that trial stand right now being accused of terrorism for a dreadful accident. So we've got to think about these things. And obviously our prayers go out to James Field Jr. And we hope that justice is served and he is found innocent. Anyway, thank you very much for listening today. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.